Welcome to Marketing for the Sales Guy, a podcast that aims to share marketing ideas that salespeople can use, but also hopefully will be relevant to B2B marketers that want to see sales results from their marketing efforts. Okay, hi everybody. On the show today, we have Luca DeStefanis, Head of Marketing APAC for Kindreel, an IT infrastructure service provider that designs, builds, and manages large-scale information systems. Welcome, Luca, and thank you very much for being on the podcast.
Thanks, Jeremy. My pleasure to be here with you today.
Yeah, great. Now, I'm personally pleased to have Luca on the pod because I did have the pleasure of working with Luca and his team a couple of years ago, and that was a very enjoyable experience. So Luca and I are going to talk today about two topics that, despite a lot of discussion, I think are still big topics and are changing constantly. And they are sales and marketing alignment and marketing talent. Before we start, though, I don't normally ask a lot of questions about the companies guests work for. But Luca, can you tell us a little bit about Kindreel and how and why it came about and what your role is there?
Yeah, sure. Happy to. Look, Kindreel is the new kid in the game of technology services, and it's already a big kid. We are a $19 billion startup. We went public last year on November the 4th. And look, what we do is to partner with leading players in the industry to design, build, and manage their infrastructure. We are working with 75% of the Fortune 100. So I think we are an essential partner, a critical partner running the mission critical system of the world. That's how I would position Kindreel.
So what is your role there at Kindreel?
I'm leading marketing in Asia Pacific. So Asia Pacific, the region including India, the Greater China Group, ASEAN, South Korea, and Australia, New Zealand, which is a big market for us.
Oh, that's great, Luca. Thanks very much for that background. Yeah, the idea for the discussion today was really born out of an article that we kind of both read on Harvard Business Review by Janice Baylis on five ways marketing leaders can drive value in 2022. And I'll share a link in the program notes for listeners here. But there was a number of interesting questions and points she made in that. In the article, the author talks of organizational boundaries that may inhibit the ideal customer experience. I think most people will read that as poor sales and marketing alignment. What are some of the problems you have seen, Luca, between sales and marketing, and how does that impact customers?
Okay, look, it's a very old problem, sales and marketing alignment. I think I want to unpack this problem on three elements. The first one is about clarity on strategy and priorities. I've seen it's absolutely critical for sales and marketing to have crystal clear clarity on what is the company strategy, what are the priorities, both at global and country level. And when this clarity is established and communicated throughout the organization, the second point is about clarity on roles and expectations. What is the expected marketing contribution to the business? Where are we expected to make an impact? How we are supposed to support sales? And that will vary highly depending on the business model of the company. So I don't think there is a one final answer that is valid for everyone. I think it really highly varies depending on the business model. The third element is consistency in execution. Once the strategy is clear, once the role and expectations have been clarified, it's important to lay out a plan and stick to this plan. Too many times I've seen in my past plans that are constantly changing because priorities are changing and expectations about how marketing can support the business are changing. That doesn't help anyone. So clarity on strategy, clarity on roles, and consistent execution, I think, are the three elements that can drive a much better and stronger alignment with the sales.
You know, that sounds great. And certainly the constantly changing dynamic springs to mind as kind of a common challenge for lots of organizations, I think. Is there any particular bad problems that you've seen, and how did you solve that? I mean, I know sometimes you were talking about defining the marketing contribution. I mean, if sales think, you know, the marketing contribution is to provide leads only, but marketing are doing more than that, how do you kind of solve that kind of problem?
Well, look, again, marketing contribution and measurement of performance, I think really is a function of the business model of the company. What we discussed before, I think, is the basic to have a clear discussion about how we are going to measure performance and contribution. Specifically in our business, which is a services business, to me, actually, it's not about lead creation and handover to sales of leads. That's a term, an expression that sometimes you hear in software companies, but it's really more about in our case, in a services company, what is relevant is to focus on relationship building and strengthening the reputation. The other thing is, I think it's absolutely important to make sure we have a clear distinction between business impact, contribution to the business, and marketing efficiency. Marketing efficiency measures are important within the marketing organization to make sure that we make the best use of the dollars or the budget on the investment. But when we talk to the business, it's important we focus on the business outcomes and the business impact. Too many times I've seen someone trying to present engagement rate on web page to a business leader or some other kind of media parameter, for example. And that's where you lose very quickly the attention of the business leader. You really need to make sure you are driving separate conversation. One is with your team about marketing efficiency. One is with the business leader about outcomes and impact.
No, that's a great point. No, thanks for that, Luca. You touched on it a little bit there in terms of having common kind of objectives, but more often than not, sales are sometimes measured in a different way to marketing. I mean, how do you get this kind of common measure of performance? What kind of performance measures do you use or would you recommend using?
Well, I can tell you what we are using, what we are focusing on. Again, that doesn't mean it's the magic recipe that is relevant for every other company, but we focus a lot on brand, and being a new brand 6 months old, it's imperative for us to focus on awareness building and brand building and reputation building. We focus a lot on relationship building, and we measure these through different parameters, such as touch point engagement on key stakeholders of our most relevant accounts. At the end, we measure ourselves, the measure of our success is going to be the success of the business. So we measure ourselves on signing, revenue, and customer satisfaction also. And we are very clear, and we are discussing all these elements together with the business because we are in a lucky position where our CEO and our leadership team is seeing marketing as integral to the company's success. So we are sitting with them and discussing the business metrics because we measure ourselves on the business metrics.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It makes a great deal of sense. We touched on kind of sales and marketing alignment, but sometimes it's not just about sales and marketing. Organizations are very big and there are different departments or different functions, you know, whether that's data or technology that kind of feed into the marketing function. How do you, if there are challenges with aligning with other parts of the organization and you don't control that part of the organization, how do you set about kind of solving some of those challenges? How do you kind of build teams when you don't directly control those teams? How do you work with other teams?
Great question. Look, I will not call it challenge. I think it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity for marketing. And when you look holistically at key touch points, moments of truth, you clearly recognize that there are other functions, sales enablement, HR, communications, and other infrastructure and back office functions that play a key role in shaping experiences that have a high impact on how our clients are perceiving the brand and shaping their opinion about our brand. So the opportunity is to lead this conversation. And in Kindred, we are lucky. It's very easy to get together around the table with key leaders across all the functions to have this kind of discussion, which becomes a positive discussion on how to elevate key touch points, key experiences, instead of finger pointing because we are seeing some kind of gap on how we should deliver. So it's critical. It's a lot of work. It's about marketing, again, taking a leadership role in bringing together these functions to manage properly the key touch points.
Oh, that's great, Luca. And I think the article we both referred to was really all about marketing leadership. And I think it's interesting that you highlight, you know, this, that being an opportunity for marketing to lead. It also highlights how positive you are when you talk about opportunity rather than my description of challenge. That just shows my negative mindset, I guess. But no, that was a great point. So just on the subject of talent, I was reading a Forrester marketing survey a little while ago, and not surprisingly, talent will be among marketing decision makers' top challenges in Asia Pacific and probably globally over the next 12 months, you know, both in terms of marketing headcount generally, but also in the difficulty in recruiting, you know, top marketing talent. What do you think are the key challenges in those areas in talent management and recruitment?
Yeah, look, well, the war for talent is there, and it's not just marketing. The war for talent is across the board, and that has an impact on marketing too. I think when it comes to attracting talents, there is one element which is always true, which is what is your value proposition for the candidates you want to attract, and what is the compelling reason for them to join the company. And that's an element that that not always is prioritized. Sometimes we just tactically focus on perks and total compensation, which is important, which is critical within this context. But the soft element of the value proposition to attract what makes your organization unique, I think it's absolutely relevant. I think for us is that if I look at Kindred, the key element of this value proposition is that we are building a new brand for a $19 billion startup with 88,000 employees around the world. And that's something that, as a marketeer, you have a few opportunities maybe in your career to contribute to. And everyone in our team has really a chance to shape how we are creating this brand and making real the brand in every experience, in every touch points that we are creating in the country. So that's our value proposition.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. I mean, in some respects, it's kind of a startup kind of philosophy, but still, it's not really a startup. It's a huge organization. So you have the benefits of both, I guess. Luca, you mentioned that it's not just marketing that's competing for talents. There are lots of functions within a company that are trying to attract talents with key data skills. What is it that you think marketing has that would attract people who don't really have a marketing background, maybe, but have the data skills and are very numerate, wouldn't normally go into marketing possibly, but you need those people now. What is the marketing proposition? Why would those people join a marketing function, do you think?
I think data scientists or this kind of skills, they join marketing because first they want to join marketing and they are passionate about marketing. And then they have a skill set that is very specific on, for example, data science. So that's what I've seen in my experience. It's not about a data scientist that is thinking, okay, should I join this finance function in this company or maybe this marketing function in this other company. I think they are marketer first at their core. They are passionate about marketing and they have a specific skill set.
Yeah, no, that kind of makes sense. I guess I was thinking in a lot of cases about, you know, investment banks kind of recruiting rocket scientists, but I think in that case, it's probably purely financial motivation. But
yeah, we are not competing with that, for sure, I tell you.
But yeah, I think you're right. I think it must come from a passion for marketing. And I imagine the marketing function, you need somebody that's kind of very proactive and kind of marketing first. But yeah, as you said, it's numerate and have those skills to kind of bring to the organization. Just staying on talent, and we were talking about recruiting talent, but the flip side of the coin is obviously retaining talent when other opportunities come up. What are the challenges? I won't say challenges, the opportunities, maybe I should use that word. You know, what are the issues there, you think, in retaining talent, and how do you do that?
Again, here is not an issue or is there an opportunity. It's really, I think the key element in retaining talent is the culture. The culture that you are shaping in the company and you are living in the company every day through different behaviors and different moments. And we are making a very conscious effort, very conscious investment in Kyndryl to shape a culture that is a culture where people wants to stay and wants to thrive. Some of the elements of this culture, being always open to learn, collaborate, and innovate with determination and grit, growing our own skills and co-creating opportunities with our talents and with our clients. We are devoted to our shared success. So it's not about the single individual that is coming out, but it's really the team success. And we motivate each other to act with integrity, passion, courage, and enthusiasm. We aim to be very empathetic. We ask questions and listen with empathy to each other. And we work to deeply understand our clients and build a trust with our clients. We really aim to be flat and empower the teams that are in front of our clients, the teams that are in our countries to make decisions. And they are accountable for making this decision quickly and to better serve our clients. And last but not least, I think we are extremely focused on delivering impactful customer experiences. So the way we shape the culture and the way we make this culture real with actions and behavior, I think that's a key element for people to stay or change company.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think culture is a key element. Actually, in what you were talking about there, you also mentioned empowering teams. So something like psychological safety is something that's quite often talked about to empower people to kind of make decisions. How important is that issue in your team? To help people kind of make decisions and decentralize that decision making.
That's a super important point, and that's something we are trying to reinforce more and more. We are asking our teams, our leaders in the field, in the countries, to be bold. Being bold requires high tolerance to failure. You cannot ask someone to be bold and not tolerate failures. Mistakes happen. We are testing, piloting things. I think the important point is to create a culture where mistakes are not just tolerated, but mistakes become an opportunity to learn and grow, either as an individual and as a team. So that's another element of the culture that we are establishing very clearly. And really, we want to live this every day.
Yeah, no, that's great. I entirely agree. And it all comes down to culture. And I think the expression used there, high tolerance to failure, is an interesting one. I think it's a very positive one, because even using that word failure is something that many people don't want to use that word. But I think embracing that is very important. So no, that was very interesting, Luca. In the article, the author talks, just returning more to kind of recruiting talents, the author talks about the need for diverse but also detailed expertise. So I think they were hinting at breadth and depth. And marketing is one of those functions where you probably need to be good at a lot of different things. Do you agree that you should be trying to get both? Or is it a case of marketing should be recruiting really specific expertise, or it should be getting candidates that have a breadth of experience or breadth of knowledge?
I'm a big fan and a big proponent of T-shape career development. You certainly need depth in pockets of expertise, but also, especially in marketing, and given what we discussed before, which is about the need to have a seat at the table with the business leader. They need to work together and orchestrate other functions when it comes to customer experience and touch points. You really need to have a diverse set of experiences that are enabling you to play this role successfully. So T-shape, absolutely. Depth is required in some very specific skill set, but to grow, you really need a diverse set of experience to be successful and to make an impact in your organization.
Yeah, I certainly like the idea of still being in the business of developing careers. I think that is very important. And just on that, if there is a specific area of your business where you think you're lacking, would your preference be to develop the talent in that area, and to train them? Or would you consider outside agencies still, or even freelancers? We have the situation now where lots of marketers are kind of freelance and working from home. Would you kind of entertain that idea? Or do you feel that, you know, for reasons of company culture, they either need to be an agency that are fully on board, or they have to be kind of, you know, working full time at your organization? Do you have a view on outside talent and how to use that for your organization?
I think it depends. I think I'm sorry, but the best answer to this, it depends. It depends on the overall insourcing versus outsourcing strategy, what kind of skills you really want to have in-house versus what you think it's better to outsource. I think it's a function on time. Sometimes there are urgent and important things which require the flexibility that is provided by contractors or agencies, but you also want to make sure that over time you grow your talent in the areas that are critical and strategic for your organization. So there are always a mix of factors that are affecting this decision, and depending on these factors, you try to make the best possible decision, knowing that also out there is a war for talent, so which is another big factor impacting our staffing model.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's all we have time for on the podcast today. Thank you very much for your time and your thoughts, Luca. Really do appreciate you being on the podcast.
Thank you, Jeremy. I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Oh, thank you, Luca. It's great to talk to you again. If anyone wants to reach out to you to follow up on the discussion or talk to you about Kyndryl, what is the best way to reach out to you?
I'm on LinkedIn. So it's very easy to find me on LinkedIn. At Luca De Stefanis.
Thanks once again, very much indeed, Luca. Brilliant. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
So, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, do share. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you want to access other podcasts and related articles, you can visit us at omjmedia.com. That's omjmedia.com. Until next time, bye-bye.